John Batsu with my colleague and friend Peter Berkowitz of the Hoover Institution, writing at Real Clear Politics of a new book, The Eighth Day, Israel After October 7th by Micah Goodman, being translated into English. It's in Hebrew language now. I come to Peter's summary of what happened on October 7th. Two achievements of Zionism were badly damaged. What achievements, Peter? What happened?
What happened? Well, the Jews who created the State of Israel always understood that they would have to defend themselves. But they dreamed that the 2,000 years of weakness they experienced as a result of exile and dispersion were behind them. Yes, they would be soldiers fighting for their country. That was a reality forced upon them. But they would be safe inside their homes. They would be secure. But the attacks of October 7th by the jihadists brought back the memories, the ages-old memories of pogroms, of being slaughtered in their own homes. This was a shattering discovery and made Israelis, on the one hand, reconsider Zionism. What had they really achieved? On the other hand, they discovered almost immediately they remained a valiant people. They rose to the occasion despite the trauma, despite the heartbreak. They showed themselves fighters, and they showed themselves willing to risk their lives to defend their country.
And today, it's not just the eighth day, it's continuing the eighth day. The war is fog of war. The struggle in Gaza continues, outside pressure from many states. It goes on and on and on. And then the threat from the north, the threat from the Houthis, the gun running into the West Bank. Is there still the unity of the eighth day, or is that fraying? Your measure, Peter?
My measure is that it is to some extent fraying, and in a way, it was with this in mind that Goldman wrote his book. He wants to identify the sources within the Israeli character, within the Jewish tradition, within the political regime that help explain the heroism in the immediate aftermath of October 7th, and he wants to build on that. He wants to avoid the deterioration back into the ugly polarization that disfigured Israel before October 7th.
And therein is the virus of polarization right now returning. However, my understanding also, and this has to do with the governance of Israel, the cabinet that makes the decisions about the war and what is to be done, the allocation of resources, the economy, the cabinet is a national cabinet. All parties are participating. Is that correct, Peter?
Almost all parties are participating. Certainly the party that, according to the polls, would win the most votes in the next election, that's the party led by Benny Gantz, is part of the cabinet. So it's a kind of, it's not complete, but it's a kind of national unity government. And there's no doubt that the country remains largely united in the war aims being not to destroy Hamas forever and ever, but to destroy Hamas's capability of returning to government or operating as an army. There remains widespread dedication to those goals and freeing the hostages.
All right. Going back then to the early part of this century, after the Intifada, the first and second Intifada, the left, as I understand it, I use that word very loosely because I'm sure it's associated with lots of different parties in Israel. The left believed making land for peace was the right way to go forward. Land for peace, having to do with the two-state solution. The right believed that settling in the West Bank, Judea and Samaria, was the right solution. Are those still on the table as arguments? Is that still part of the virus of polarization?
Well, actually, this goes to a crucial point that Goodman emphasizes. Yes, sure, you can find people on the right who believe that Israel should exercise sovereignty over the entirety of Judea and Samaria. Yes, sure, you can find Israelis on the left who believe that Israel needs to disengage from the West Bank, Judea and Samaria, in exchange for peace. But a point that Goodman emphasizes is that a significant proportion of the right has abandoned its dream of exercising sovereignty over all or most of Judea and Samaria, and a significant proportion of those to the left of center have abandoned the idea that returning all of or most of Judea and Samaria would bring peace. In other words, a substantial center exists in Israel that believes there's going to have to be some kind of territorial compromise, that believes that the 2.5 to 3 million Palestinians need some sort of self-rule, but that you're not going to be able to, but that Israel is going to have to maintain some kind of substantial presence. In other words, there is a pro-Zionist, centrist majority that wants Israel to remain both a Jewish state, a rights-protecting and democratic state, and concentrate its political efforts on reconciling these competing goals for Israel.
When voices say no, returning to two-state solution, that was a mirage. Those voices, are they right, left? Are they Netanyahu, against Netanyahu? What do those voices represent after this war concludes in some fashion?
So now a lot, even most Israelis will say a two-state solution. Are you out of your mind? Do you see the people who were governing in Gaza? Do you not see that 71% of Gazans and about 71% of Palestinians in West Bank, Judea and Samaria support the October 7th atrocities? How could we possibly abandon control of these areas to people who want to destroy us? That's understandable in the short term. For the intermediate term, maybe even the long term, Israel will have to retain security control, ultimate security control over Judea and Samaria and over Gaza. But still, Israel could and should, not only in Palestinian interest, but its own interest, adopt policies that, I underline this next phrase, to the extent possible, shift government, civil government responsibilities to local Palestinians. And so, if I may just add this quickly, the most that Israel can hope for Gaza, it's not the altogether elimination of Hamas, but to reduce Hamas to what it is on the West Bank, not a governing power, not an army, but bands of thugs who do continue to operate, with the Israeli Defense Forces having freedom of maneuver within Gaza to defend Israel against those operating bands of thugs.
Last thought, Peter, we just have a minute. Iran. Does it enter into his conversation? Because that's the driver here. 30 seconds.
It hasn't entered into our conversation much in the United States, but it ought to enter into our conversation because virtually all of Israel's major enemies now are Iran-backed, from Hamas to Hezbollah to proxies in Iraq and Syria to the Houthis launching missiles at Israel from Yemen to the head of the octopus itself, Tehran.
Peter Berkowitz, writing at Real Clear Politics, about a book now being translated into English. It's in Hebrew, if you have that gift. The Eighth Day, Israel After October 7th, by Mika Goodman. Goodman. Very straightforward. I'm John.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.